Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. Man, this week just flew right by. I can't believe that Grand Prix Portland was already 1 week ago. I had a blast up there. What a great city. I love that there's a river going right through it and you can be on either side and just check out the whole town. It was just a really cool city. I really like that. I loved getting together with the Prodigies on Friday night. That was absolutely awesome. And then bumping into more of you on the floor on Saturday and Sunday. That was really, really cool. Before I share a few lessons learned from Portland, I want to give a shout-out to Luther, who is the newest patron of MTG Pro Tutor. Thank you so much, Luther. I really appreciate your support. It really, really helps the show. It means a lot. I actually met Luther back at GP Oakland and then got to connect with him again at GP Portland. And I got to talk to his son a lot about Commander. He was showing me some of the cards that he was going to put in his deck. And it was just really fun to connect with Luther and his son, Max. So thank you guys so much for your support. So a little more about Grand Prix Portland. I played Black-White, the same deck that Travis Wu navigated all the way up to a second place finish. I'm friends with the creator of the deck, a guy by the name of Marion Johnson. He made the deck, shared it with me, and shared it with his playtesting group, which includes Travis Wu, and so there were several people who were running this particular list. Travis obviously did the best, making it to the second place, but I was very pleased with my performance as well. I got to play all 9 rounds, which is really cool because in previous Grand Prix, I've had a couple buys when my opponent didn't show up. But this time I got to play all 9 rounds, so I love that. I felt really confident with the deck. I just fell short a couple times and did not make day 2. I missed it by 1 match, which I was also happy about because usually I pick up my losses way early and I don't have a chance for day 2 and I'm just playing for fun, more or less. But I made it all the way to the 9th round. If I won round 9, I would have made it to day 2, and unfortunately I lost. In fact, all 3 of my losses came to Bant. And it's weird because this particular deck, the black-white one, has a good matchup against Bant, and I guess I'm just unpracticed. I suppose I didn't navigate the matchup well enough because all 3 of my losses came to Bant. So I know where I need to be focusing my energies. I need to practice the Bant matchup and the ramp matchup. Every time I play against a deck that ramps into Emrakul, I usually lose as well. And that's what it's all about. It's about recognizing where your weaknesses are and shoring those up. So I love the deck. I'm going to stick on it for a while, and I know what I need to work on. Obviously, moving forward, my deck will get tweaked, the Bant decks will get tweaked, and so there's always this constant back and forth, this little struggle of trying to stay ahead of the changes. But overall, I'm really happy with my performance, and I loved Grand Prix Portland. The whole weekend was amazing. I really look forward to seeing you at a Grand Prix. I definitely plan on traveling to those that I can and holding more meetups and meeting more prodigies, so definitely stay tuned for that. Last but not least, before we dive into the interview, I want to give a huge shout out to Joseph. Congratulations, he won the giveaway. Unfortunately, I didn't hear back from the person that I announced on Tuesday's episode, so I repicked as I said I would, and Joseph won. He's already confirmed. I dropped the box in the mail yesterday, and he'll be getting the fully stocked tournament bag. So thank you to everyone for participating. I really, really love giving back to the community. And doing something fun like this was a great way for me to connect with some of you and, again, give back. I really appreciate your support by listening to the show and look forward to other opportunities to give back to you. So congratulations, Joseph. Enjoy your fully stocked tournament bag. Alrighty, so today we have another fantastic guest who knows a lot about Magic and shares his expertise with us. So let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super excited to have our awesome guest with us today. Our guest is a husband and father and has a PhD in neuropsychopharmacology. He's a longtime Magic player, a level 1 judge, a tournament organizer, and a store owner from Brasilia, Brazil. He has 2 Grand Prix top 8s and 1 Pro Tour top 16. Prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Jonathan Melamed. Jonathan, how are you doing today?
Hey there, I'm great. Excited to be here to be with you guys.
We are so happy to have you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Well, if I can, I'll try.
Excellent. Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Jonathan, the best place to do that is on social media. He's on Twitter at InsideMTG, and you can find him on Facebook as well. So, Jonathan, I want to dive into what you have going on first outside of Magic, because dang, you have a lot. So first of all, what the heck is neuropsychopharmacology?
Well, I am a pharmacist, and I'm very intrigued by the some aspects of neurosciences. And my research group, we investigate aspects of drugs and behavior. So psychological aspects of pharmaceuticals in animals' behavior. So that's basically it.
Wow, that's incredible. And so you're actively doing that? That's what you, I mean, you're current, that you do that right now?
Yeah, I just actually finished my PhD. And
okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. It's like barely 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah. So big congratulations.
Yeah. And now I'm looking forward to my next step. I'm still looking what will be, you know. Meanwhile, I play some Magic. It's not that bad,
yeah.
Huh, guys?
Not bad at all. And so is the store owner thing just something you do on the side, or how do you fit that in?
Well, it's a project that came along during my journey at the university. And I was reached by my partner, Paulo, with this project to launch a store, and a very good project that as a player I would love to be engaged in. But we never really had the opportunity here in Brazil, in Brasilia specifically, to have such stores, you know, like card shops and board game stores and stuff like that. So my partner developed this project basically on the American concept of a card shop. And therefore I embraced it, and I try to do all my research classes and all my uni things during the morning and have the afternoon for the store to solve issues and get everything handled.
That's incredible. Like, you have some really good time management skills, sounds like, because like you said, you prioritize and you get your PhD research, all that stuff done in the morning, and then dedicate the afternoon to running the store and playing Magic. And that's incredible. And in addition to that, you mentioned that you are a husband and a father, so you're balancing your family time as well.
Well, after you get to handle women, like all the necessity of a wife, you know, and a daughter, you can handle a PhD and a store easily, you know.
That's awesome. How old's your daughter?
She's 12. She's almost okay. Getting into Magic. She's a little bit not so into it yet, but she'll get there, I'm pretty sure.
Wow, that's great. So you have a lot going on. That's so neat that we get to learn a little bit more about you and what you do outside of Magic. But we also want to dive into your story and your history with Magic. And so we would love to use stories to bridge the gap between where you are and where we are, because you've top 8ed 2 Grand Prix, top 16, 1 Pro Tour. And so we want to learn what you did and how you got there. But we want to start at the beginning. Tell us the story of when you very first saw, learned about, played with Magic cards.
It was 1997, and I used to live in Rio, and violence is a little bit higher over there compared to Brasilia, and I didn't have much free coming and going, like liberty with my parents, because of violence, and I was so young. So I used to hang out with my other friends at the playground of our building. So one of them got in contact with Magic, and he taught us all about, at least what we thought it was about, Magic. Because when you first learn what is Magic, you are not actually learning Magic, you know?
Yep, very true.
All the kitchen rules and stuff like that.
Yep.
Those applied at a time. And when I moved back to Brasilia, I saw this, like, other guys, older guys, playing at school. And I got interested. And suddenly, I realized there was a store that ran tournaments. And I'm a very competitive person. If I'm going to do something, I want to do at the very highest level. Mm-hmm. As I can with the opportunities I get. So I started going to the store, and playing first trading cards, I didn't have like the experience to play tournaments, but I started trading cards and observing the more experienced players. And a little bit later, I managed to put a deck together and started competing. In the year of 1997, if you look to my DCI, you only see losses. All losses, you know, in tournaments. But I was persistent. You know, you got, like, if something is too easy, it doesn't get my attention. But it was very tough. I never win. So that caught me, you know, that kept me interested.
So what was that very first set that you came in on?
My first starter that I bought, it was Ice Age.
Wow. Awesome. So you came in on Ice Age. Yeah. And you mentioned back there in 97, how many digits is your DCI number?
6 digits.
Nice. Hear that, everybody? A 6-digit DCI number. That is really, really cool. I think that's really cool.
But like, I'm not like Martin Giusa. He has like an ascension career. Like, in 1 year, he went from nobody to Pro Tour Top 8. I was not like that. I kept trying, kept learning. And by the year of 1998, I already had some victories, you know?
Now, have you been playing solid since 97? Or did you have a break?
Nah, like, school was always a first for me. So I didn't have a break, but I didn't focus as much, you know? I didn't have enough time or money, as I was just a little kid, and Magic is a lot more expensive in Brazil compared to USA. So I didn't have much opportunities back then. But from 1999 on, I started getting some decent results at GPs, and I kept going. I never stopped.
That's awesome. That is really cool. We love hearing the journeys and the stories. And since you started and you've been playing a lot of Magic, whether it's on or off or whatever, you've obviously experienced all those sets since 1997. What's been your favorite set?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. That's a really tough one. But I got to say Neo Phyrexia.
Ooh, why is that?
Come on. Who doesn't want to cast spells without paying the cost? Like, when you get to, like, detect and probe your opponent on turn one, it's awesome. You get to pay 2 life, see their hand, and not lose a card. You know, like, Phyrexian mana and all the Phyrexian cards, the new Phyrexia cards, not only the ones you pay life, they're great. Like, Elashnorn and Shield Red. There are so many good cards, you know, Vorinclex, Gingitaxias. Those cards are awesome. And I really like the set. I think it contributes so much to modern format. And the power level of the cards is very high also. So I really like the set. And I had good results with it. So I'm a little biased, you know.
No, not a problem. And along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
My favorite card is Island.
Really?
How not to love an island.
Excellent. Well, I normally tell people to, or ask them to tell us what that card is and what it does, but I'm pretty sure everybody knows what Island is and what it does. But so why, is it just because blue's your favorite color, is the most powerful, so Island's the most important card, or what?
Yeah. I have some other cards I really like, as of Oath of the Druids, Tropical Island as a different kind of island, you know?
Yeah.
Let me see. There are some other cards like Splinter Twin, Snapcaster, Vendilion Click.
With Oath of the Druid, what's that one? Can you tell us about that card? What is it? What does it do? And why do you like that one? Because that sounds pretty interesting.
Oath of the Druids is a green enchantment that costs 1 green and 1 colorless. It says, during your upkeep, if you control fewer creatures than your opponent, you look through the top cards of your deck till you reveal a creature, and that creature goes into play.
Whoa.
Instantly into play, you know? It's insane. It's awesome. Especially for a control player, when my opponent used to play turn one Jackal Pup, and it's a 2-1 for one red creature, and I would play Oath of Druids and bring a Phantom Nishoba, which is a 7-7 lifelink. I would just crush them, you know, and it was an awesome feeling.
Man, that seems pretty good.
Yeah. I really like also Force of Will and Counterspell. I really like blue in general.
Nice, nice. Well, I'm glad I got you to talk about a green card, even though you love blue. That's great.
Yeah.
So you mentioned when you came in to Magic, you said that you were really, you know, a competitive player and you wanted to do things, whatever you did, you wanted to do it the best and participate at the highest level. But when you first came into Magic, what made it fun? Why did you play back in the day?
Man, differently from most people, it was the challenge aspect, you know. Since the beginning, I wanted to masterize Magic, you know, to master the game. For me, I think most people, and I really respect that, and I think it's more healthy to start playing Magic together as Magic the Gathering, you know. But in my case, it was actually the challenging aspect of the game.
Excellent. And what makes Magic fun for you now? Like, why do you keep playing Magic?
It's still challenging.
Yeah, it never changes, huh? I mean, well, it changes, but the challenge never changes.
It's still challenging, you know. And nowadays, as a store owner and a judge, I really like to help others with the game. As a player, it still challenges me, but as a gathering, it makes me help people, which is awesome, you know. I help others to interact amongst them and to understand the game while at the same time having fun, which is like so awesome, you know. I have no words to describe it.
That's great. I love it. It's so fun to hear the different reasons why people come into Magic and why they stick around and what makes Magic fun for them, because Magic is, you know, many things to many people, and it's just so cool to hear what makes Magic fun for you and why you keep playing. That's great. Absolutely great. So on your journey, you've had some hard times and some good times, and you obviously, like you said, back in the day when people first start, there's kitchen rules and all this stuff. When you started playing Magic, or at least when you started getting serious, what was an early challenge that you struggled with that you eventually overcame?
To attack. As a control player, I never did actually learn how to attack with creatures. I used to play Wrath of God. I used to bounce creatures. I used to counter spells, draw cards, combo people. But the most tough for me was actually knowing when to attack, to turn my creature sideways. It's so simple, but that was the toughest part for me.
And how did you get over that? How did you learn that? What was it like when you were learning that?
It was actually playing Limited, playing tons, lots of drafts, because when you play Limited, draft or sealed as well, the most important aspect of the game is knowing when to attack and when to block and how to do those two things, you know. And playing a lot of Limited brought me that skill, you know.
Excellent. Yeah, so because in Limited, especially nowadays, they're making creatures, putting a much higher emphasis on creatures, so you're definitely going to have to learn attacking and combat math and all that good stuff for sure. So that's really neat. I'm glad that you were able to overcome that and take that with you on your journey. And as we move on to your journey, again, we all have ups, we all have downs. We really want to focus in on two moments. The first one being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience. So take us there.
Oh, boy. It was the actual PT that I top 16. It was Pro Tour Austin 2009. And I was playing a future match. And after it was a limited round of Zendikar, triple Zendikar draft. And I was playing blue-green landfall deck. And after I had just won my future match, Marcio Carvalho, the very same Marcio from now, the limited master, he looked at me and said, "God damn, Jonathan, you're awful. You played so badly this match."
Oh.
And that got to me in a way that it hit me very hard, you know? Like, I was playing, I was winning, I was like, I don't know, 8-1 or 9-1 at the Pro Tour, and a friend of mine tells me that I'm awful, you know, because I did some misplays in that match, and that was a very tough one to take it, you know, after winning the match.
Right, after winning. So what did you do, like, moving forward from that experience? What changed? What did you do?
Well, I try to learn. I'm always trying to learn, even when I win. That's something I learned right there at the very moment. Even when you win, there's something about the game that maybe you should have done different. So every time after I play a match, I try to evaluate it in my mind, you know, like, what if at that point I had chosen a different path, you know? And despite winning or losing, I try to evaluate. I try to play very tight to not miss triggers and to pay a lot of attention to the game.
Right.
Regardless what position you are in, because for some games, one of life is very alive, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I'm with you there. Like, one of my favorite phrases is, we can't win every time, but we can learn every time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you put that into practice. Even when you win, you try and learn something. And then when you lose, obviously, there's a lot to learn there. So that's really neat that even though you were winning, you took this, because you could have easily been like, whatever. Like, I'm winning. I'm doing great. But the advice hit you and you took action. You took it on and you improved yourself as a player since then and have kept on doing great. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
On the flip side are our highs and our proud moments. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
My proudest Magic moment. I got to say, one of my top eights, my first two individual top eights was like the breakthrough, you know, like, in 2011, I had a Nationals top 8, which was the last Nationals as conceived by Wizards, and I top 8ed that one.
That's really neat. Tell us about that. So it was a National top 8 in 2008?
2011.
Yeah. And so what happened there? Why was that such a proud moment for you?
Because I had already been 9th, 10th, 11th. And 12th at Nationals. I didn't had any previous top eights in like the high top level competition, nor GPs, Nationals, or anything like that, or just PTQs and smaller tournaments. And making top eight of that event made me realize I could do it, you know. I was not meant to be a player for top 16. I could cross the line, and it was very rewarding.
That's awesome. That is really neat. So your first major top 8, and it made you realize that you could do it, that you're not a top 16 player, you're a top 8 player. I love that. So as you've been on this journey, experiencing these highs and these lows, what's been the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
Oh boy, what's the deepest thing? Well, I guess is that you have to be positive, no matter what. I'm not a very positive person as a whole. And you got to do your best regardless of the situation. So that's one of the aspects I learned the most at my first GP Top 8, which I was 3-2 after round 5. I lost game 1 of round 6. And after that, I just won every single game or match, you know? till I could draw in. And that was only possible because regardless of the scenario, I tried my best. I had my back against the wall, but I was still alive for winning the whole thing. And I didn't stop till top 8, you know? And
yeah.
I put all my strength, energy, and effort into making the best plays, regardless of the position I was in. I just wanted the next game, you know? I'll win the next game, and I'll think about what comes out of there. And I tried to not let my disappointments make me feel or act bad about the next thing, you know?
Right. You don't want to carry that, those emotions into the next game. Whatever happened this game, especially if it was, you know, a loss, you got to wrap it up and leave it behind, and you can't carry that with you to the next one.
Yeah, but that's not just for a game, you know, even though I used it as an example. It's for life, you know. I've learned to be like a more optimistic person. I'm still not an optimistic person, but I did improve.
But you're more optimistic. Yeah.
I did improve. Yeah.
I love how we can learn something in a game or in one aspect of life and apply that to other places. Like you said, that doesn't just apply to in between games and Magic. You can take that to life. You know, if something happens at school or at work or whatever, you don't have to take that with you home. You can wrap it up and leave it behind and be, you know, positive and optimistic for the next phase, which is, you know, being at home with your family or whatever. Just like we don't want to carry those emotions between games. So I love that. I love how we can learn things in games that apply to real life, and we would just become a better person all around because of it. So thank you for sharing. That's really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And you've played thousands of games against hundreds of people, and you've seen so much and learned so much. And like I said, we can't win every time, but we can learn every time. And, you know, the prodigies, we know that, we expect that. And we want to know what has been the biggest mistake that you see players make, and then how can we avoid that mistake?
I think communication is the best aspect to go around difficulties, you know? I think that the major mistake people make is not communicating well during a game. And if you try to communicate everything, when you miss something, it can be taken as an honest mistake. While players are most of the time trying to not communicate everything in order to make your opponent making mistakes. But that's something, that's a nail biter, you know, like that's something that might jump back at you. I think you have to be, you gotta be nice with your opponent and communicate well, and that thing will avoid so many major issues.
I really like that. Like, that makes perfect sense. If you communicate the entire game, then when you make a mistake, it comes across, you know, as an honest mistake because they've seen what you've been doing and probably what you meant to do the entire time. But if you're, like you said, basically angle shooting and trying to, you know, hide things, or not really hide things, but not communicating well, then when you make a mistake, people will, doesn't know, did he make a mistake, like an honest mistake, or is he trying to do it on purpose, you know? And so that can really come back and bite you in the butt, like you said, because, yeah, it's just because people don't know. And so by being open and clear and communicating well, that can really clear up a lot of issues. I like that. And what does that mean? What does that look like? Is that just being, okay, you know, I'm going to tap these and for this spell, and just kind of announcing everything as you walk through it and just really kind of spelling out what you're doing? Is that what you mean by communicating during the game?
Not really communicating everything, like I'm gonna untap, I'm gonna draw. You don't need to do that because that makes the game become boring, even though it's acceptable to do it. But I mean, when you know your opponent might have something, like announce your combat step before you declare attackers, because
right,
some people try to declare attackers as a in a fast manner in order to make the opponent not be able to tap the creature or something
right.
like that. And
right.
Magic is not about a fast game. It's about a clear game. So either you know what you're doing or you do not. It doesn't matter how fast it goes.
Right. Got it. So being clear and communicating, not necessarily the whole thing, like you said, because that could get boring, but on the times that really matter. So if you know your opponent's playing blue, don't just slap down all these spells, you know, play a spell and then, you know, ask them, wait to see if it resolves, and then, you know, keep on moving because you know that he or she might have, you know, an opportunity to interact. And then especially, like you said, in combat, you know, kind of going through the steps. All right, move to combat, declare attackers, just kind of move there because, again, communicating clearly, giving your opponent the opportunity to respond and react. And then likewise, you'll have that opportunity when it's their turn because you've been communicating clearly and moving through it in a methodical manner.
Yeah, that's right.
I love it. That's really neat. So the biggest mistake is not communicating well during a game, and that can just lead to sloppy play and confusion. And in the end, if you communicate clearly, you'll have a better game, more understanding, and people will know what you're doing, what you're trying to do. So I love that. Thank you so much for taking us through that. I really love hearing about you and what you've learned about yourself and then what you've seen in the game. And it's just one of my favorite parts is to talk about what people see in Magic and then how we can take that and move on to be better players ourselves. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here and sharing all these things with you guys.
So recently, I mean, you've been doing well. How many pro points do you have right now?
I have no clue. I have no idea. Well, I don't know, really.
Okay. But you are qualified for Pro Tour right now, right?
I am qualified for Pro Tour Honolulu.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. After missing the last two at the PDQ finals, I was very anxious about making top four of the GP last month.
Yeah.
And me and my teammates, we had a very good run, but we still needed to catch one more win at the very last round. And it was a nail biter.
And who was playing that game?
Yeah, I did have to win.
It was you. Yeah. So it came down to you. All right. Yeah. All right. So we don't see a lot of team events, but I find them very fascinating. I think it's so cool when you're able to, you know, do well at a big event with, you know, teammates, with friends and whatnot. And so I'm just really excited to have you here and talk about that. So like you said, it came down to you to play this game and you were anxious. And how'd it go? Like, how were you able to pull through?
Well, it was tough because we were playing against the Argentinians. And they were trying to play slower because they already a drop put them in.
Oh, okay.
And we needed the win. So I opened a fast 1-0 for me. And meanwhile, my folks were both on 0-1. So I knew I had to win since that point. And I didn't think it would come down to me because I had such an easy and fast game one, you know? While we were into game two, one of my teammates lost game two and we were down. But the other one was almost getting there to tie his match. And for what we had seen so far, their decks were way superior than ours. But as I said earlier, we would do our best regardless. So my friend had a good game three and I was still into game two and I lost it. So it was down to him and me now. And we were still with our backs against the wall, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the time was ticking because team events are a little bit slower than regular and because of all the communication going on. And when we started game three, my middle seat friend was almost securing game three for us. So I knew it would come down to my match.
Wow.
Yeah. And my opponent was still slow rolling on me and trying to take the match to a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to call judge numerous times because stalling is not a good way to win a match, you know?
I completely agree. I hate going to time and yeah, it's one of those things. So I really want to focus on this. So you ended up calling a judge. I was going to ask, how did you keep the pace moving so that you wouldn't go to a draw? And you ended up calling a judge several times?
Several times. Like, it came to a point where a judge would stay by our side the last 15 minutes of the match.
Yeah. And did they prompt your opponent to, hey, you need to make a play now?
Yeah, they did.
Wow. Yeah. See? So don't be afraid to call a judge, especially at competitive level events. Like sometimes I hear of players who are, you know, nervous or don't want to do it or whatever. But hey, like, especially at competitive level events, we're all paying to be there. So everyone needs to follow the rules. So don't be afraid to call a judge, you know, whether it's just to clarify situation or in this case for slow play, because personally, I hate going to time. I hate drawing. I like to play Magic and finish the games. Even if I lose, that's fine. But I just hate going to a draw. It drives me nuts. So don't be afraid to pipe up, call a judge, and just explain the situation. And it might get to the point, like you, Jonathan, where the judge will stand there and monitor the game and make sure both players are moving at a healthy clip to finish.
Yeah, I like a saying that says something like, if you think to call a judge, you should already called, you know?
Got it.
A judge is there to help. It should not be taken as rudeness to call a judge. He's there to help people communicate, to help people understand, and to avoid issues. So if you have any doubts about the pace of the game, a rule, or anything, call a judge. He'll be gladly go there and try to help.
Completely agree. Well, that's incredible. I love how you took us through there, that the three of you were playing. You got your first one pretty quick. You're like, I got this. Your teammates lost their first one. And you're like, okay, I'll just, you know, win this next one and we're good to go. But then they came back and one teammate lost and the other teammate got his second win. And now it's down to you. You're 1-1. You're in game three. How did you keep the anxiety out? Because you said, oh my gosh, it came down to me and you were anxious. How were you able to still focus and play good Magic even though, you know, with all that pressure? How were you able to do that?
In the end, it's just a game, you know? In the end, it's a hobby, and we are there to have fun. So at all time, I just kept in my head that I was there to have fun. What makes me very happy is to win. So I would win the next game regardless. So I tried to play as tight as I can.
That's awesome. That's neat. I love that. I love how... I love how it all came together and it was on you and you got there, and that's just so fun. So, Jonathan, what would you say is your favorite or your best format?
Modern. Easily.
Excellent. Easily modern. So, diving into that a little bit, what would you say to a brand new modern player? What if someone is just starting modern, they've only, you know, cracked in, I don't know, a week or two ago? What would be really beginner advice for a brand new modern player?
First of all, learn the deck you're playing with. Learn about all other decks as well, because modern is such a diverse format. By then, you might be able to judge if the deck is good or not. There are so many possibilities. You have like tier 1 decks at one time, they are tier 3 decks at another time, you know, because it's always evolving.
So right now, aren't there like 20 viable decks in modern?
More or less.
Maybe. So how do you get to the point where you know those? I mean, it just seems, I hear that, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many. What can you do to familiarize yourself with either your deck or the big decks in modern?
To play them as much as you can, because even though you have different builds, most of the decks attack some specific point of the game. So you have like black green decks with white or red or whatever, they are in the essence a black green deck, which will try to disrupt your hands and hit you hard with Tarmogoyf and other big creatures. So as long as you know what their game plan is, you are good to go, you know? Like, you have Tron decks are, in essence, a Tron deck, regardless of which colors they are playing. So as long as you keep track what their game plans are, you know how to counterplay
And that comes by, it's more or less common knowledge what the game plan is for many of these big decks. So you can look it up online. You could talk to other modern players. It's probably one of the best ways to go about it is, and like you said, playing it, you know, getting a, you know, getting your hands on a friend's deck or proxying it or something. So you don't have to build every single deck, obviously, and playing these decks so you can learn what the game plan is. And like you said, once you know what the game plan is, then you'll know how to disrupt it. And then you can pick the deck that resonates with you and you'll be familiar with some of these other decks because you put in the research.
Yep, that's it.
Perfect. Man, love it. Man, absolutely love it.
To know how to play, you gotta play. That's basically it, you know?
Yeah. So when you travel to events, Jonathan, what do you take with you? What is inside your tournament bag?
I always carry a coat because despite the day temperature, usually these big convention centers, they have some high air conditioning. And also, once we are nervous, stressed, well, anxious, we tend to feel more cold. So a coat is never bad. Also, which has relation to the coat, is food. We always tend to have bad meals at events. Because we are always playing, we don't want to stop, we don't want to get into lines. So what I try to do is to eat well. Sometimes I bring like a snack with me at my bag and drink lots of water to make me, help me think better during the whole event time.
Yeah, so a coat to stay warm. I never thought about that, but that's so true. It's good to be, you know, even just a light jacket to stay prepared. And then snacks or food for sure, and water. And that's in addition, I'm assuming, to obviously your cards and your playmat and your regular card, magic gear.
Yeah, card, playmat, a notepad, and a pen. And dice, always.
Right. So as we pull into the home stretch here, we'd love to hear if you have any habits or activities that you do on a regular basis that help you get better at Magic.
Well, my profession helps me because I'm always reading scientific articles about neurosciences, and it helps me keep focused, you know, and that's basically it.
Do neuroscience articles like help you, I don't know, understand people better, and so you're kind of able to apply it to the game and your opponents, or what is it, or just focusing on reading something like that for so long helps you focus on Magic?
Yeah, the second explanation, like I don't get to understand people better because everybody's different, so it's really tough to understand each one.
Well, once again, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Jonathan, the best place is on social media. You can find him on Twitter at InsideMTG or on Facebook. Just look up Jonathan Melamed and you can find him there. So, Jonathan, what is one last parting piece of guidance? Either something that you've already said that you want to emphasize or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
Have fun. Magic is about fun. That's like the most important aspect that people tend to forget.
Jonathan, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your expertise with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks a lot.
Jonathan, it was great having you on the show. Thank you so much. Prodigies, I hope you learned a lot. And as always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Jonathan Melamed. And I'd like to encourage you, if you like today's episode, if you like the show as a whole, please share it with a friend. I love getting the word out. I love helping people grow their magic talent and improve their magic skill. So think of a friend who wants to level up their game and share the show with them. It's because of you that we're growing, we're doing so great. And I really appreciate it when you share the show with those you play with. So show MTG Pro Tutor some love, pass it on to a friend, and I hope your weekend is full of all kinds of magic activities. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.